Okay, if everyone could please take a seat, I'd like to make a start. Okay, I hope that you all got on well with the source sheet. I put a lot of effort into the source sheet, so even though we're not going to go through all of the sources today, nevertheless, hopefully it'll be helpful to you, and you can use it for a future reference at some stage. There's lots of material on it, there's lots of footnotes and things like that. You can go and find other things and look around at the topic generally. Let me tell you what I'm here to do today, and what I'm telling you what I'm not here to do, or what I'm here not to do. I am here to really do two things. Number one, to help you to clarify, I'm sure you all have pretty good understandings anyway, but I'm here to help you clarify why there is such a thing as second day Yom Tov today, because I think that a lot of people have mistaken understanding. A lot of people think that second day Yom Tov is a product of some lack of clarity as to which is the right day. And today, even though we have that clarity, for some obscure reason, we keep it anyway, just because, like, for old time's sake, that's completely wrong. Hopefully you already picked that up from the sources. So I'm here to clarify that. And I'm here to present the shitot, the different positions, as to what to do if you're a chutznik coming to Israel for Yom Tov. Because there are interesting positions on that, and it depends on who you are and what you're doing, and therefore we're going to have those two discussions today. What I am not here to do, it's important to know, is to try and persuade you on a certain level to keep 2 days, or to keep 1 day, or to keep 1.5 days. That is not my job at all. I'm not a posek, and I don't propose to paskin anybody's shilas. We will talk about how to reach a psak on these issues during the course of the shir, but I am certainly not here with an agenda to try and push any particular psak. I'm sure many of you have got different psakim from different people, and we'll see how they all fit together. Fine. So let's have a look at the sheet, and let's start the first thing. First of all, hopefully you all understand how the moon works. There is a cycle, it's 29 and a half days long, the moon orbits around the earth, and since in halakha we cannot have a month which is 29 and a half days long, we can't start the new month in the middle of the day. Why not? Because as I pointed out to you in source number 3, it says at chodesh yamim, there is a pasuk that says chodesh yamim, a month has to be made up of days, of whole days, and therefore we're stuck. Chazal knew full well what the length of the moon was. I brought you, actually, fascinatingly, Chazal calculate the length of the exact length of a month to 29.53059 days, and that is correct to 5 decimal places to what the current scientific understanding of, at least one understanding of what the month is, and therefore they knew exactly the month was 29 and a half days. It couldn't start in the middle of a day, and therefore there have to be half the month's 30 days and half the month's 29 days. That's how it works. So you never know from one month to the next whether this month is going to be 29 days, which is called Chaser, okay, and then Rosh Chodesh is going to be on day 30, or whether this month is going to be Malay, which is going to be 4, which is 30 days, and Rosh Chodesh is going to be on day 31. That's the Shaila. Basically, that's how it works out. The Sanhedrin had a certain number of obligations when it came to Rosh Chodesh. I brought them in source number 4. There were basically 4 mitzvot. They look at them, number 4 with me in the Rambam. Hilchas Kiddush HaChodesh in the Rambam, which appears at the end of Zmanim. You'll find it there if you ever look. Mitzvahs Asei Min HaTorah. It is a positive Torah mitzvah, says the Rambam. Al Beis Din, on the Beis Din, Sheichashvu, that they calculate. V'yedu es Yorei HaYoreach, or Im Lo Yorei. If they have to know whether the new month, whether the moon will appear, whether the moon will not appear, they have to know that in advance. And that they have to check with the witnesses, they have to inquire of the witnesses. In other words, that's the first 3 things. They have to first calculate the month. Secondly, they have to accept witnesses. Why do we need witnesses if they already know the calculation? We'll talk about that in a minute. Thirdly, they have to announce the new month, v'yikadesh es ha-chodesh, to be mekadesh the month. And fourthly, v'yishlechu v'yoydiu es shar ha'am, they have to send out and inform the people, be'ezi yom hu rosh chodesh, which day is rosh chodesh, k'dei sheyedu, so that they'll know, be'ezi yom heim ha-moyadais, which day is the correct day for the chagim. But 4 things: to calculate the month, to check with the witnesses, to be mekadesh the month, and then to announce to the rest of the Jewish people when the month is. Fine. If there aren't any witnesses, they know anyway when the month is, because
They've worked it out. They had, in the ancient world, they had extremely accurate astronomical calculations. We saw already that Chazal had the exact length of the month, so they knew when the molad, when the exact new month was going to appear. They knew that. There was no real suffix. So what did they do? So they waited on the day 30 of the month to see if Adim would come. If Adim came, and they knew that that indeed was the day that the molad was, so they were announced, fine, we have the Adim, we know that today's the right day, today's Rosh Chodesh, let's inform everybody, we'll talk about how in a minute. If the Adim didn't come, so they'd wait till tomorrow. If the Adim came, but they knew that really Rosh Chodesh was tomorrow, so they'd ignore the Adim, and they'd say, thank you very much, very nice of you to come, but we'll be checking with someone else. And they would always work it out so that Rosh Chodesh fell on the rate the day it should have done, even if, because the Adim might be mistaken, they might have seen a cloud, they might have seen something else, a comet, I don't know what they might have seen, and thought it was the moon. Yeah. The Adim say, we saw last night the moon, and if they check out, if the Beis Din checks them out, and as the Rambam said here in source number 5, they check out, they say, how thick was the moon, where exactly was it in the sky, which way were all the, was the moon pointing, if everything checks out, they say, Shkayach, last night was indeed the new moon, today, day 30, is Rosh Chodesh, and they tell everybody else, and they will see the light, the beacons, etc. If the Adim get it all wrong, they just ignore them and they move on to the next Adim. Yes, Judith? Yes, the Adim have a mitzvah to do what they can, because we want to encourage them to do it next month. They're even allowed to be Mechalel Shabbos, the Adim, to go and tell the Beis Din when they saw the moon. There's a whole mitzvah there in Rosh Hashanah, where the Adim came and they were wrong. But yeah, we encourage people to want to do this, because it's very important for the mitzvah. Yes, Noah?
What would be the point of relying on Adim if you have these calculations?
If one of the mitzvahs in the Torah is that the new moon should be Mekudesh al pi shnei Adim. How do we know? From Moshe and Aaron, from the Achodesh Hazel Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. Why is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted there to be Adim as well in the new moon calculation? That's a whole different discussion I'm not going to get into now.
Okay,
yes.
So then if after the end of the day that because
that's not why they made a calendar, by the way. No, we'll see why they made a calendar soon. That's not, it's not because of the Adim. Let's go on. How did they inform the Jewish people when the new month was? So I'm sure you're all very familiar with this. Initially, they had beacons. Have a look at number 6. Berishayna hayamasiim masuois. Originally, they lit beacons, and I brought you a nice little map there at the bottom. They started on Harazesim. They had the next one was Sartava, or maybe the one after that. There may be one in the middle. You know, if you ever go up the Bikar Valley, towards the Galil, you'll see Sartava. It's a triangular shaped mountain. Very high, you can't miss it as you're going up the down the northwards on the Jordan Valley Road. That was the next beacon, then the next one, 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 until everybody would see and would know. And it was pretty instantaneous. Beacons are extremely effective. There's that excellent scene in The Lord of the Rings where they light the beacons on the tops of the mountains to what's that? Oh yeah, well, I don't know. I never saw that. I'm sorry. My repertoire is a little bit limited, but there is that, and I thought it's extremely good because you can see exactly how it would work, and with the beacons being lit, they would inform people immediately. Rashi tells you there in source number 6, if the Adim didn't come, or it was not the right day, they just wouldn't light the beacons. So if they look out at the night and there are no beacons, they know today was not Rosh Chodesh, tomorrow must be. If there are beacons, they'll know today indeed was Rosh Chodesh, and they move accordingly. Over the page to page number 3. Even though they were relying on this system, they had a rive. They knew that most times it worked out that Elul and Adar were chaser, were only 29 days. Okay? They never found that Elul and Adar were Mu'ubar, were Malay, and therefore, truth is, even without any of this, they pretty much knew which day was going to be the right day for Yonsef for Sukkot, and which day was going to be the right day for Yonsef for Pesach. And therefore, the question is, did they really have a suffix? That's an interesting question, but you have to bring into the calculation the fact that they actually did have a rive, that they knew when the months would be, and that plays into the whole calculation soon. Now, what happened to the beacons? They were discontinued. Number 10, Berishayna. Originally, Kishahayu based in the Kachim as a Chaydish Hayu Masim Masuois, they would have these beacons, Barashi Haharim, on the mountains, Kadesh Yedu Harachaykim. So everyone would know. Mishe Kilkalu Hakutim, or maybe Haminim, depending on which Kirsi you use. When the heretics got involved and they messed up the beacons, they would light beacons at the wrong times. What was their agenda? Why were these heretics getting involved?
because they wanted to make it, according to some of the Purushim, they wanted to bring it out that Pesach fell on Shabbat, so that Mimacharat HaShabbat, the day that you bring the Omer, would come out on a Sunday. As you probably know, the Baitusim, not the Sedukim, but the Baitusim had a big thing at the end of the Second Temple period, that they said the Macharat HaShabbat, when it says in the Pasuk, you bring the Omer the day after Shabbat, according to Torah Shabbat Peh, that is the day after Pesach. But the Baitusim said, no, it's the day after Shabbat, it's Sunday. So they always tried to work it so that it came out that the first day of the Omer was indeed Sunday, so it would fit according to their calculations. So everyone started messing everything up, so Chazal said, fine, we're not going to do this. We're going to cancel the beacons, okay, and what do? Hitkinu, middle of the second line, number 10, they made a takana, sheyiu shluchim. They're going to be messengers, yoitzim u'moidim l'rabim, telling everybody what to do. They can't be Mechal al Yontzef. They ain't Sarich Leiman. Certainly, you don't even need to say Kal Vachayma Shabbos. They can't be Mechal al Shabbos. She ain't Mechal al Shabbos. Likaimoy El Lekacha Bilvad. The only people who can be Mechal al Shabbos are the Edim that come up to the Beis Din. But the Shluchim, the messengers, can't be Mechal al Shabbos. So, how many days do the messengers have to get the message out to the people? So the answer is, in Tishrei, not many days. Why? Because they've got Rosh Hashanah, they can't be Mechal Rosh Hashanah, they've got Shabbos, they've got Yom Kippur, so they are missing quite a lot of days in order to get the message out. In Nisan, they have more, because there's no Rosh Hashanah, and there's no Yom Kippur, it's just a question of Shabbos. So they got where they got, and they couldn't get any further. When did that switch happen from the beacons to the messengers? It's not 100% clear, but it sounds like it was sometime during the Second Temple period, because that's when they were doing at the end, that's when they had the mess up with the Baitusim, that's when they had the Har HaZeitim, etc., etc. So that's when the switchover happened. Fine. So then we had messengers, and they were going out all over the place. Where did they go? So they went wherever they were sent. And that's why the Rambam has a very interesting shita, which is that not just in Chutz La'aretz, but also in Eretz Yisrael, there are places that the messengers never went. If you lived in Israel in a place that no one ever sent the messengers, then you didn't know which was the right day, and therefore you also kept 2 days of Yontzef. And therefore the Rambam shita, very interestingly, was that at this period in Jewish history, there were people in Israel keeping 2 days Yontzef, as well as people in Chutz La'aretz keeping 2 days, and there may even be people in Chutz La'aretz keeping 1 day Yontzef if the messengers got to them in time. So it wasn't to do with Israel according to the Rambam and Chutz La'aretz, it was to do with where God messengers and where didn't get the messengers. Although we don't paschalize like the Rambam, but the Rambam Shita is there, and you'll be aware of it later when I mention some people that kind of were choshish for the Shita, that was concerned about the Shita and brought it into the modern day sect. Fine. So far we're pretty good. Now, what if you knew, even though the messengers didn't get to you, what if you knew which was the right day? How would you know? How would you know? Because you did the calculations. You did the calculations, you knew your astronomy, you knew exactly when the new moon was going to be, and therefore you could predict with, certainly in Tishrei and Nisan, we said anyway there's a Rosh. Everyone knew basically that it was a 29-day month. So what about somebody that knew what they were doing? Could they keep 1 day even though the messengers never got to them? So that's the Gemara. I want to pick it up at the bottom of number 14. Page 3, number 14 at the bottom. And these next 3-4 Gemaras are extremely important, because they will explain why we have 2 days Yom Tov today. So first of all, we'll start with Shmuel. Where did Shmuel live? Bavel. Okay, first generation Amora. Said Shmuel like this. I'm a Shmuel. Yachilna, I'm able... If I was able, I'm not on the Sanhedrin because he lived in Babel, but I actually have the ability to be metaken the calendar for the entire Golas, because I can tell you exactly which day is the right day for Yom Tov, because I know when exactly the moon was where. I know that. Similarly, if you turn over, just 2 generations later in Babel, you have the same sentiment by a number of other Amoraim. Look at number 15. Amalei Rav Safra le Rebbe Abba. So Rav Safra says to Rebbe Abba, again they're living in around the 4th century in Babel. Kegoin Anam, people like us, D'yadinam b'kviya d'yarche, we know which is the right day of the month. Why do they know? How do you know they didn't have a fixed calendar? Maybe everybody knew. The answer is no, we know, the other people don't. So can we keep 1 day Yontzef, or do we have to keep 2 days Yontzef? So the Gemara says, if we're living in a Jewish town, we're not going to keep 1 day Yom Tov. Why? Because everyone's going to scream and shout. In other words, everybody else is waiting for the messengers. They never came, they're keeping 2 days Yom Tov.
we know we don't need to keep 2 days yontif. We're going to keep 2 days yontif anyway because we don't want to cause a fuss. Hence, we're going to see soon Israelis that go to Chutz La'aretz. When an Israeli goes to Chutz La'aretz for yontif, do they have to keep 2 days yontif, or do they not have to keep 2 days yontif? So in the Yishuv, if they're in a Jewish town, they do have to keep at least some kind of second day yontif, because if they're driving up and down the road in the middle of Monty or whatever it is, or Brooklyn, on second day yontif with their, you know, kippah or whatever, people are going to get unhappy. But if they're in the midbar, as it says, he says next, by midbar, my, what's the halacha? Amalei. So he said to him, no, hacha amar Rav Ami. Rav Ami said the following, be yishuv osa, the midbar mutter. If you're in the Jewish town, then you have to keep second day yontif, but you know which is the right day. So if you're living in the desert, or if you're going to Tiol, a bunch of Israelis take a villa in the middle of the Alps for Sukkot or for Pesach. So they don't have to keep second day yontif. There are no other Jews there. Nobody cares. And there's no one to see. There's no machlokas. And they know exactly which is the right day because they keep one day anyway. So here we have a situation where there are Amoraim that say, we know which is the right day of yontif. We can keep one day of yontif as long as we're not with other Jewish people, which is going to cause a problem. Fine. Number 16 is really the most important source in this part of the shiur. So I want you to look at it very carefully with me. Okay? Are you too cold or are you just nice? Can you get someone to turn the air off? Would you mind? Sydney, would you mind telling her to turn the air off? Because that will do two things. It will A, warm up the room, and it will B, take this dreadful noise out of my left ear. You don't realise how loud it is giving a shiur here. I feel like I'm talking over the whatever. Fine. Number 16. Have a look at number 16, please. Itmar. Look carefully, because this is a difficult Gemara. Shnei Yamim Tovim Shel Galus. The 2 days of Yontif for Galut. Okay, second day Yontif, which I've abbreviated to YT2. Okay, I'm sure you worked out what that was by the end of the sheet. Oh, the woman with the shalat. Go on, let's see if it works. You have to go over there and do it.
No.
Okay, point. That's it. Oh my goodness.
I think we're good.
It didn't turn off.
No, she told me you can't turn it off.
What do you mean you can't turn it off?
She said not to turn it off.
It's going
to get just to make it lower.
All right, fine, whatever.
We're
okay, guys, have a look at source number 16, please. Itmar. Shnei yamim tovim shel galus. Rav amar noel de bezeh muteris bezeh. So Rav says if an egg is laid on the first day of Yontif, you're allowed to eat it on the second day of Yontif. Why? Because, we'll see, Rav basically understood that we know which is the right day. The first day of Yontif is the right day. The second day of Yontif is not really Yontif. And therefore, if an egg is born on the first day, already by the second day, it's not a problem. Rav Asi said, no, nol de bezeh, asura bezeh. If the egg is born on the first day of Yontif, you can't eat it on the second day of Yontif. Why? Because it's 2 days of Yontif. It's one whole Yontif. As you know, why can't you eat an egg which is born on Yontif? What's the problem? Why is it muksa? What kind of muksa is it? Nolad, literally. It's come into being. It wasn't in being before, it's now in being. And therefore you can't eat the egg. Fine. Now, I'm a Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira says as follows. Second line, number 16. Kvase the Rav Asi Mistabra. I think Rav Asi is correct. What did Rav Asi say? He said it's also to eat the egg. Rav Zera said, I don't think you can eat the egg. I think there's 2 days of Yontif for sure. Dehaitne, because these days, Yodinam b'kfir de Yarcha, we know which day exactly is the right day. Don't worry, we know which is the right day of Yontif. Ukav dinam tre yumid, we still have to keep 2 days. Why does Rabbi Zeira say we have to keep 2 days? Rashi explained, look for a second at the underlined Rashi number 17. So Rashi explains that Rabbi Zeira means Chok Kavua Hu Mitakanas Chachamim. Rabbi Zeira says it is a takana of the rabbis. Al Yisrael Arachokim, on the faraway Jews last oysa to keep 2 days Yontif. Afilu beloy Sofik, even when there is no Sofik. That seems to be Rabbi Zeira's position. It's a takanas Chachamim, we have to keep 2 days Yontif, even if we know exactly when the right day are. Days off. Amar Abaya. Abaya says, no. Kvasi the Rav Mistabra, I actually agree with Rav, who says you can eat the egg on the second day. Ditznan, why? Because it says in the Mishnah, Birishona Hayamisim Asuois, Mishikikolo Akusin, Hiskina Shiyuv Shlochim Yoitzim, because we had all these systems for communicating to the Goyle exactly what's going to be. The Ilu Batlu Kutim, if we could get rid of the problems, get rid of the heretics, and bring back the beacons, Abdin Chad Yomo, because we keep one day. The Hecha de Matu Shluchim, and if the messengers get to you in time, Abdinu Chad Yom, of course you keep one day. So what does that mean, says the buyer? If you know which is the right day, you keep one day. Why on earth would you keep 2 days, if you know which is the right day? So a buyer says, of course you eat the egg on the second day, because we know which is the right day, it's first day, not second day. There seems to be a machloikus in Rabbi Zeira in that period, and a buyer as to whether they kept 2 days or whether they kept 1 day. Rabbi Zeira says, yeah, we know which is the right day, but we still keep 2 days. A buyer said, no, if we know which is the right day, we keep 1 day. Finished. By the way, when the third Beis HaMikdash is built, how will they communicate to the Goyla, which is the right day of Rosh Chodesh? Will they use beacons? Will they send a text message? Will they send an email? We'll have like the Beis HaMikdash followers on Twitter. Yeah? They'll tweet, yeah, update, follow your feeds, fresh feeds from the Beis HaMikdash. It's a good question. I mean, is there any suggestion that they'll send guys out on horses, you know, wandering around the Middle East, trying to get people to know which day the Rosh Chodesh is? So, Rav Zevin talks about that question, a number of other people talk about that question. I'm not going to get into that now, but it's an interesting question. If you want to get a good domain name now that might be worth a lot of money, basamikdash.com. I mean, someone's probably got it already, I'm sure. Like, you know, or thirdbasamikdash.org.il or something like that. You can buy them all up now so you have it. Anyway, the Gemara therefore seems to present two opinions. Rabbi Zeira's opinion and Abaya's opinion. The Gemara then goes on to say the following critical words. Look at source number 18 with me, please. The Gemara says the following. Vahashta, this is a continuation of the Gemara there. Vahashta, but now, says the Gemara. Diyadinan bekfir diyarcha. We know exactly why, which is the right day. My time adinan trei yuma. Why do we keep 2 days of Yom Tov? Now, what's the Gemara asking? Is the Gemara just continuing with Abaya? So Abaya saying, well, so why do I keep 2 days Yom Tov? It doesn't sound like it. I brought you the Chasam Sofer, which I didn't expect you to learn on number 20, but the Chasam Sofer learns the Gemara as being the following. This is not a continuation of Abaya. This is a new question by the Gemara. The Gemara has already given you Abaya and Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira says, I keep 2 days. Abaya says, I keep 1 day. And the Gemara now has a different question according to the Chasam Sofer, which is what? Now we have a fixed calendar. Now, exactly when the fixed calendar was introduced is not 100% clear. Did they have a fixed calendar at the time of Abaya and Rabbi Zeira? Possibly, but the standard approach to when we started getting a fixed calendar is it was just after them. It was under Hillel Nasiya. The classic understanding of when the fixed calendar appeared was around about the year 350. Under the last Nasi, Hillel Nasiya, who was the last of the Nasiim, realized that Eretz Yisrael was basically closing down for business in terms of the Jewish community. The Romans were now Christian. They were banning all Jewish practice and they were pulling apart the Sanhedrin. So he said, if we don't have a Sanhedrin, we're not going to be able to be Mekadesh HaChodesh at all. We're not going to have any kind of calendar unless we do something soon. So what did he do? He was Mekadesh all the Chadashim up until however long it would take, thousands and thousands of years, and he fixed the calendar, so now they have a fixed calendar. Again, we're not 100% sure whether that is the exact time that happened, or where it was a bit after or a bit before. I brought you a reference to a book by someone called Sasha Stern, some people may know him in London, who wrote a book about the Jewish calendar, and he talks about that in great length. But the Gemara apparently is asking the question for today, which is, now we have a fixed calendar, is there any point in keeping 2 days Yom Tov? What's the point? Now there's not even a suggestion of a Sofik. Actually, it says on the calendar when Rosh Chodesh is. Why on earth would I have a second day Yom Tov? There's no Sofik at all. So the Gemara answers the following. I mean, on the first line of number 18. He says, why do we keep 2 days Yom Tov? Mishum deshalchu mitam. Because they sent out a message from there. Where's there? Eretz Yisrael. Hizharu b'minhag avoseichem b'yadeichem. Be very careful to keep the old minhag of your parents going. You must keep that going. The Gemara goes on to say, Zimnin de Gazru Shmada, because there may come a time when there's a Shmad, there may come a time when the non-Jewish authorities, Rashi explains in number 19, close down your ability to understand the calendar properly. And you'll come and mess up everything. What will you mess up? You will end up getting all the months wrong. You'll end up thinking there's one day and really there's 2 days. You'll get them all on the wrong days, and you'll end up eating chametz on Pesach. Which, why is chametz on Pesach worse than anything else? Because you're chayav kares. So that seems to have been the concern of Chazal. Now, was that a real concern? Well, yes, there have been many countries in the world where the non-Jewish authorities have effectively closed down Torah learning completely. Look at the Soviet Union. Within the space of around 25 to 30 years, they managed to take a vibrant, knowledgeable Jewish community and turn it into a community of people who just know nothing about anything. It's amazing to see what happened there in the 20th century. It's terrifying to see what happened there. So Chazal said, you know something, even if you have a fixed calendar, it's critical that you still keep second day of Yom Tov. Because of this reason, and maybe because of other reasons we'll come to at the end. So one thing I want you to understand from here is the following. There is no suggestion that the reason we keep 2 days Yom Tov is because, well, that's what they used to do, and even though we know now, even though there's no reason now, we still keep it anyway. That's not correct at all. The mitzvah, the takana, if it was a takana, we'll see in a minute, the decree to keep second day Yom Tov came from Chazal at a time when they already had a fixed calendar, when they already knew which day was which, and they still wanted us to keep second day Yom Tov. So there should be no doubt in anyone's mind that the reason for second day Yom Tov is somehow based on a suffix. There is no suffix anymore, and there was no suffix when the takana was made. That's very important. So why would they make the takana? Okay, you can get into it, why that happened, and how that works, but that's very important as a baseline, because there are people who do say, like I said at the beginning, or do think erroneously, that the reason we keep second day Yom Tov is that there used to be a suffix, and there is no suffix, but we don't want to change because we're all reactionary, or something like that. We don't like change. Jews like doing what they always did. It's a bit kind of dysfunctional to think that way, because why would we do something just because they always did it? That's not usually how things work. Now, the shaila is, what is the status of second day Yom Tov today then? And this is where I want to get into the modern day experience in the second half of the shiur. What should people do with second day Yom Tov today? So fine, so if you live in Chutz La'aretz, unless you pass like the Rambam, which we don't, everybody in Chutz La'aretz keeps 2 days. Fine, that's nice and simple. But what about people who come here? What about people who come from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael? So there's a machlokes rishonim as to whether the status of second day Yom Tov today is a minhag or a takana. And I want to clarify what that means. Look at source number 24, please. Says the Ram. The Ram lived in Spain in the 1300s, and he says the following. Aval mikol makom. Okay? Rayaso einu makir. I don't see what the exact riot is that they're bringing for this issue as to whether it's a minhag or a takana. Beki mipnesha huskashem minhag. Maybe oiso raya can, because it's called a minhag, are they bringing a raya that it's really a minhag? But haloi shem ikka takana hi. It's an ikka takana. Ikka is a takana. It's not a minhag. Damrinim shalchum isam. It says they sent out from there. His haruba minhag of a seichem. Keep what used to be the minhag of your parents that were keeping 2 days Yom Tov because they didn't know which day it was. Keep that minhag going. Why? Zinu negazu gezer ba'asid kukuli, etc. Demashma, it sounds from that, says the Ran. She takana kavua amru. They gave a fixed takana that this is what you had to do. She anhigu kiminag avaseicha mipnei chashash kilkul, that you should do what they used to do. Mikol makam takana kavua haisa. La'oisam shikfar nagu, those people who used to keep two now have a takana to keep two. Even though we know exactly which is the right day. So the Ran Shita and the Ritva and other people is, it's a takana. According to Tosfos, looking at number 26, Dukavasi Ashikhan de Mabarachinam, we found, for example, that we make a brocha on the second day of Yom Tov, for Shnei Yamim Tovim, Shalgolias, the Eino Ela Minhag Ba'alma. But actually, it's a minhag. It's not a takana, it's really a minhag. What's the difference if it's a minhag or a takana? A number of differences. For example, look in the Rambam, in 27. Kol dvarim ha'ele she'amarnu, hayu bizman she'hayu based in shal Eretz Yisrael, mekachim al pi haraya, hariya rather, v'hayu b'nei ha'golios, oisin shnei yamim kidei she'istalik min ha'sofik. In the old days, they used to keep 2 days, Yom Tov, says the Rambam, because they had a sofik. They didn't know the day which the Rosh Chodesh was. Aval, says the Rambam, Hayom, today, Shebnei Eretz Yisrael Somchem al Hacheshbon, they have a fixed calendar, Umakachin alav, and they have the months based on the calendar, Ein Yom Tov Sheni lehistalik min ha'sofik. There is no sofik anymore for Yom Tov Sheni. So why do we have it? What does he say? El minhag bilvad. It's a minhag.
but not so quick, because the Rambam in number 28, when he talks about second day Yontov, look at the words I've underlined, he says, about Takonas Chachamim hi, Sheizharu b'minhag avotechem b'yadeichem. What is the difference between a takana and a minhag? Now, when I say the word minhag, what do you think? Right, a custom. Do you see a minhag as being above or below a drabbanan? Right. In other words, you have this idea that there's doraisa, there's drabbanan, and there's minhag. Like, you know, my minhag is to have scrambled eggs on a Sunday morning. That's my minhag kind of thing. When they say the word minhag, just understand that they don't mean that. And minhag is a technical term for what? Chazal, when they created halacha, drabbanan, created it in a number of different ways. And that's why I brought you number 29. I'm not going to go through it in depth, but Chazal created drabbanan, says the Rambam, in three different ways. Either through gezeira, or takana, or through minhagos. So the word minhag here doesn't mean the way minhag that you think. That people do stuff and it becomes a minhag, like kidneys. Kidneys is a minhag. Why? People started not eating certain things on Pesach, and therefore that caught on, and now people don't eat it because it's the minhag to do that. Here, minhag doesn't mean that. Minhag means, did Chazal create this din within a rubric of gezeira, or takana, or minhag? And there are practical differences. For example, even though all three have the same status, and the Rambam's, by the way, his shita, of course, very famously is, if you break a drabbanon, that is equivalent to breaking two mitzvahs d'oraisa for every drabbanon. Why? Because the Torah gives you a mitzvah's assay and a mitzvah's los assay to keep drabbanons. Says the Rambam, that applies to a gezeira or a takana or a minhag created by Chazal. What's the difference then between a takana and a minhag? Brochas. Usually we don't make a brocha on a minhag. Second day Yontov, it seems we do for other reasons. And there may be other differences. For example, if you are a chutznik coming, and this is where I want to move into this now, if you are a chutznik coming from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, if the reason that you keep second day Yontov is because of minhag, would you keep it in Eretz Yisrael, yes or no? Yes, you would, because the halachas of minhag require you to keep your old minhagim going until such time as you leave your old place. But if it's a takana that in Chutz La'aretz they have 2 days, but in Eretz Yisrael they have 1 day, maybe when you come to Eretz Yisrael, okay, so here it's not based on minhag, it's based on a takana, and the takana was 1 day here and 2 days there, so there I'll keep 2 days and here I'll keep 1 day. Why is it when it comes to minhag that you keep your old minhagim going? So this is an important thing. It's based on a Gemara in Pesachim, which I've not got time to get into in great detail, but it applies in many areas, including in areas of second day Yontov and Hilchos Tznius. I know everyone loves to talk about Hilchos Tznius, but in Hilchos Tznius, a lot of Hilchos Tznius is based on minhag as well. It's something called Das Yehudis, which the Gemara in Ksubas there says is the rubric, is the basic parameters for how Hilchos Tznius works, which is very subjective on many levels and depends on what the local minhag is. So look at number 31 for a second. Mokam shenagu lasois malacha ba'arvei pesachim ad chatzos. If a place had a minhag to do, that they allowed you to do malacha in the morning of Erev Pesach, oisin, so they can do it. Mokam shenagu shaloi lasois, in a place where they don't allow malacha on the morning of Erev Pesach, ein oisin, so you can't do it. Fine. Ha'hoylech mimokam she'oisin lemokam she'ein oisin. What if you go from a place where you normally do malacha on the Erev Pesach in the morning, but you go to a place where people don't do it? Or mimakam she'ein oisim lemakam she'oisim, or the other way around. So what does the Gemara say you do with your minag? Noisnelav chumrei makam she'yata misham v'chumrei makam she'halach l'sham. You have to keep the chumras of the place that you came from, your old minag, and the chumras of the place that you went to. V'al yishane adam ifnei ha'machlokas. And don't cause any trouble in the place that you went to. Meaning, if I come from a place where they don't do malacha on Erev Pesach, and I go to a place where they do malacha, I can't do malacha. Why? Even though I'm in a place where people do malacha, that's not my minhag. My minhag is from there. How long do I keep my minhag from back there? As long as I'm going back there. Look at number 32. It says, at the end, Rav Ashi Amar, Hani mile hecha de'ein das olachsor. I can only get rid of my minhag when I'm not going back. But Rabbi Baruch Hanan, in this case, Daso Lachzor Hava, he had a minhag and he was going back. In other words, Daso Lachzor, you have to learn source number 32 in depth to understand exactly how that context works, but that's the key with minhag. Am I still tied somehow to the place that I came from? Am I going back? If I am going back, I keep the minhag of the place that I came from, but once I decide that I'm not going back, then that's the end of the minhag. For example, you know, take Kineas.
I have a minhag that I eat kidney. I don't eat kidneys. I'm Ashkenazi. I might not look Ashkenazi, but I am Ashkenazi. I promise you. I don't eat kidneys. So if I go to a Sephardi home on Pesach, can I eat kidneys? Of course not. I keep my minhag. If I go to visit a Sephardi country, can I eat kidneys? No. If I pick up and move to Tayman, and that's it, cut my ties and go become a Taymani, can I eat kidneys? Probably. I mean, why am I? Am I still an Ashkenazi? If you ask Rav Avadi Yosef, he'll say that there's no one has the right to be an Ashkenazi in Israel at all. Israel is a Sephardi country, and therefore, when people come to Israel, they become Sephardim. No, isn't that right? And chutzpah that you have an Ashkenazi shul in Israel, chutzpah, mazeh, ze makom Sephardi. So it depends on how you see it. The Ashkenazim didn't see it that way for reasons that are quite evident. But there comes a point when you lose your ties. When you cut yourself off, you're not going back anymore. In Hilchos Sneas, like I said before, let's say you have a Das Yehudis, you have a particular way of dressing which is based on the community that you come from, okay? And you go visit somewhere else, do you suddenly become one of them for Shabbos? If you're from, you know, if you go to Bnei Brak for Shabbos, do you have to get dressed up like a Bnei Braker?
Yes.
No, Dafka. You have to do whatever you need to do to avoid Machloikas. But you don't suddenly become a... If you're a girl from Bnei Brak and you come to visit, I don't know, Kiryat Moshe for Shabbos, do you suddenly switch and you... No, you are who you are. You keep the chumras of the place that you came from until you move. And when you move society, when you change completely, you say, that's it, I'm now here. Then you take on the minhag of the new place. Okay. The Shaila, the $64,000 question with Yontov, is when am I here and when am I there? So let's have a look at that, and we'll deal with that for the next 15 minutes, and hopefully you'll get some clarity. Now, I'm on page 7. What did they do in the time of the Beit HaMikdash? Well, pretty much everybody agrees that when people from Chutz La'aretz came to visit Israel at the time of the Beit HaMikdash, they did not keep 2 days of Yontov. There was no one keeping 2 days of Yontov in Israel in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. And there are lots of proofs for that, and I brought you sources for it, and also there's a proof from later on from the Mabit in number 36, but it's pretty clear that they didn't keep 2 days of Yontov. Also, fascinatingly, there is no discussion in the Rishonim as to what to do if you're a chutznik that comes to live in it, that comes to Israel for Yontov, which is really interesting. There is a discussion as to what to do if you're Israeli and you go to visit Chutz La'aretz for Yontov, but there is no discussion as to what to do if you came from Chutz La'aretz and visited Yontov, which is an interesting question. I don't know why that is. Why does no one discuss it? Why does no one think of it? Did no one do it? Did no one visit Eretz Yisrael for Yontov? Maybe not. Maybe it was impossible. Maybe under the Crusades and yada 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 yada. Could be. But no one discusses it. The first discussion really comes up in the 16th century. And the Shulchan Aruch, who doesn't put it in the Shulchan Aruch, he also wrote tshuvas. And one of the tshuvas in the Abkas Roichel in number 34 says like this. He says, look at number 34. V'chein mi sheba mechutz la'aretz le'eretz Yisrael. Someone who comes from Chutz La'aretz to Israel, v'darso lachzor, and his intention is to go back to Chutz La'aretz, havi b'chlal b'nei Chutz La'aretz, he still remains a ben Chutz La'aretz, ninhu. V'chein ma'asim b'chol yom, and we see all the time, he says, he's writing in the 16th century, in the 1500s, we see all the time, v'chol shana v'shana, every year that goes by, oilim l'shloish regalim, people come from Chutz La'aretz to visit Israel, l'chutz La'aretz, l'eret la'aretz, v'oisim yom sheini shal galius. He says, look, where did Rav Yosef Karo live? No, not at this point. He only lived in Spain for 4 years, and then he was expelled when he was a little boy. He lived in Sfat. He said, look, don't tell me about Chusnikim. I know about Chusnikim. I live in Sfat. These people come to Sfat all the time. Not much has changed in that way. They come to Sfat, and they walk up and down those steps, you know, whatever he had there, and they come and they keep 2 days Yontov. Everybody knows they keep 2 days Yontov, and that's his psak. They keep 2 days Yontov. Why? Because until they cut ties from Chutz La'aretz, they're going back there, Dat or Lachzor, they have to keep 2 days. And that is what the Mishnah Berurah paskens, and that, I would posit, is the majority psak today. Most people will say that if you're a visitor, now let's start with the easy case, you're a visitor, you're coming for Yontov, you're getting, staying at a hotel room, and you're going back in a week's time, back to America, back to England, wherever you're coming from, you keep 2 days Yontov according to this position. I brought you a long list of people at the bottom of the page who hold this position, some older tshuvas, Mishnah Berurah, as I mentioned, Chazon Ish, Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Minchas Yitzchak, and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rav Eliashiv, the Sfaradim as well, Rav Ben Tzion Abba Shaul, Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, and I also put Rav Eliezer Malamed here. Who's Rav Malamed? Do you know Rav Malamed?
Yeah.
Rav Malamed is one of the very important poskim in the religious Zionist community, and he also says, of course, if you're a chutznik,
Believe me, he is very connected with Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. And he says if you're a chutznik and you come to Eretz Yisrael and you're visiting and you're going back, then according to the halachas of Minhag, which we seem to keep, then you end up having to keep 2 days of Yom Tov. But the Mishnah Berurah, by the way, says you're not allowed to have a minion in Israel for a second day Yom Tov people. Why does he say that? Again, because you have to respect places and not make a machlokas. You're making, it's almost like a bizayon for Kedushas Eretz Yisrael to turn around and say, we're chusnikim, rah, rah, rah. We don't live here. We're pretending that the day has Kedusha when it doesn't really have Kedusha. It's just because of our minag. He says you can't make a minyan. The minag is to make minyanim, and the second day people do make minyanim all over the place. And that seems to be accepted now. No one gets upset about it, and it doesn't cause any machlokas. But that seems to be the majority psak. Now, at the same time as the Shulchan Aruch was writing the Avkas Roichel, there was someone called the Mabit. Go over to page 8, please. Now, this tshuva is not mentioned by many people because it only came out of the woodwork recently. It's taken from a Ksav Yad. It's taken from a manuscript of the Mabit. The Mabit is Rav Moshe de Trani. He lived at exactly the same time as the Shulchan Aruch. And he writes exactly the opposite psak. He says, if you are a chutznik and you come to visit Eretz Yisrael just to visit, you keep 1 day of Yom Tov. And what's his main reason? Then if you've got a chance to look at it. His main reason is, look, what we have to do today is keep the minhag of what they did then. So what did they do then?
One day.
Visitors came to the Beis HaMikdash, they kept 1 day. So what are you telling me to keep 2 days for? The minhag that I have to keep is the minhag of my grandfathers and great-grandfathers to keep 1 day Yom Tov. That's what I should keep. So he keeps 1 day Yom Tov. He says, you keep 1 day Yom Tov if you visit. The Chacham Tzvi is the one who everyone quotes, because the Chacham Tzvi was better known. He's Rav Tzvi Ashkenazi. Why was he called Ashkenazi? Because he lived in a Sephardi country, exactly. No one calls you Ashkenazi if you live in Germany. He lived in a Sephardi. Why is he called the Chacham Tzvi? Right, because the Sephardim called him a Chacham, because he was a rabbi and he went back to Ashkenaz. That's how he ended up being a Chacham, and then called Ashkenazi. So he writes in number 37, and this is very important. Look at what he writes. We've got time to do it inside. Actually, no, I'm going to tell you outside what it is, but I advise you to look at it. He says in number 37 the following. And this is perhaps the most important tshuva that gets quoted all the time. He says, look, when it says you have to keep the chumras of the place that you came from, that's only if those chumras would work if you settled in the new place permanently. For example, let's say, I don't eat rice on Pesach. And I go visit a Sephardi country, but I'm going back to my Ashkenazi country. So the Chacham Tzvi will say, look, if you settled in the Sephardi country, would you be allowed to not eat rice on Pesach? And the answer is, yeah, I can do what I like. Don't have to eat rice. No one's going to force me. It's free will. No one's going to make me eat rice on Pesach. I can do that. Says the Chacham Tzvi, but 1 second. If you come to Israel and you settle in Israel, are you allowed to keep a second day Yom Tov? Why not? You're not allowed to invent new Yom Tovs. You're not allowed to add on, keep an extra day. You can't do that. So says the Chacham Tzvi, you can't tell me to keep a chumrah, which if I actually came to live here would be a chumrah which was also to keep. That's not called a chumrah. And therefore when Chazal said you have to keep the chumrahs of the place that you came from, they weren't talking about a second day Yom Tov. That doesn't work that way. And therefore the Chacham Tzvi paskened, when in Rome, do as the Romans do, although they weren't his words. Okay, I think that comes from a quote from somewhere else. Okay, and you can tell me later if you know where it comes from. The point here is the Chacham Tzvi paskened that when you're in Israel, even if you're a visitor, even if you're going back to Chutz La'aretz tomorrow, because it's inappropriate for you to keep a chumrah which will be altered to keep if you settled here permanently, and that's the psak of the Chacham Tzvi. Famously, and you should know this also, in number 38, the Shulchan Aruch Harav. Who's the Shulchan Aruch Harav? The Alter Rebbe of Lubavitch. He also passes this way, although he says Yesh Cholkim, he brings different shitas, but he's famous for this psak too. So what comes out from this is that a number of people pasken like the Chacham Tzvi. First of all, most of the Chabad rabbis, and as you know, if you have a Chabad rabbi and you ask him, should I keep 1 day of Yom Tov, the chances are they would say, yes, keep 1 day, although not all the Chabad rabbis say this, it's important to know. Other people bring this as well. I brought you various different tshuvas. This was apparently a standard psak of the old Sephardi Yishuv in Jerusalem from the Chida, from Rav Chaim David Yosef Azulai, okay? Chaim Yosef David Azulai.
This was apparently a very common Pesach that people kept one day. And some people say that this was the Pesach of Rav Kook. Although it seems more likely from what other people say that Rav Kook said 1.5 days for reasons that we'll see. But I brought you all the sources at the bottom and you can look. So is the one day Pesach a legitimate Pesach? Absolutely 100%. It is the one day Pesach which is famous, that if you're visiting Eretz Yisrael, you keep one day Yom Tov because of all the reasons that we said. Now, there are also poskim, and you should realize this because this can affect Pesach as well, that even though they don't paskel like the Chacham Tzvi, they do take the Chacham Tzvi into account as a tziruf. What's a tziruf? What's the name of tzarif? To combine. In other words, even though they'll say I basically hold 2 days, if you're a suffek, if you're a borderline, if you're a grey area case, since the Chacham Tzvi anyway says to keep 1 day, we'll take that into account and we'll give you a 1 day Pesach. There are poskim that say that. For example, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach very much did this. And when we came, when the Mani family came to Israel, and I asked my Rav is a student of Rav Shlomo Zalman, and he said that my particular scenario was very grey area. I left my job, but we still had our house in Israel. We came, in England rather, we came for 2 years, but we were prepared to go back if it didn't work out, but we wanted to stay. We put our kids in school here, but we paid for our school places back in England for 2 years. You don't give up your school places, whatever you do. You know, another job, I'll find another job. A school place, never find a school place. Okay? So, I'm serious. We pay for our school places. So, what are we? Are we in Israel, or are we in England, or without? So, the Rav said, look, you're really in the middle. But since my Rav, Rav Shlomo Zalman, is mitzareif, the shita of the Chacham Tzvi, therefore I'm going to pass and you keep 1 day, and you keep 1 day. Fine, so we kept 1 day. I thought before I kept 1 day Yom Tov here, it was going to feel so strange to keep 1 day Yom Tov. And it really didn't feel strange at all, I must tell you. But it we did that, when we were visitors, we always kept 2 days, but as soon as we moved here, we kept 1 day. Now, that's the 1 day Pesach. You should just know the Chacham Tzvi's son, the Chacham Tzvi and his son were a fascinating pair. Very controversial, both of them. Very different in many ways. They came out with some wild psakim on different areas in Halacha. I'll tell you about it another time. Completely wild in many ways. The Chacham Tzvi's son actually went so far the opposite. He said he thinks all people living in Israel should keep 2 days Yom Tov today as well. And there should be no such thing as 1 day Yom Tov. And everybody should keep 2 days Yom Tov everywhere. Okay? So you can see that he went the opposite extreme. That didn't catch on for reasons that will be obvious. But he gives reasons why that was. What's a day and a half? So some people think a day and a half is like a modern fudge. That's not true at all. A day and a half is a very old Pesach. It traces its way back to the Ashkenazi Yishuv that came to Israel at the beginning of the 19th century. This was the Pesach of Rav Shmuel Salant. This was the Pesach almost certainly of Rav Kook. What is a day and a half? A day and a half is that you keep the first day, obviously, and the second day you don't do malacha. You don't do malacha. You daven chol, you wear tefillin if you're a guy, but you don't do malacha. This also famously is the Pesach of Rav Soloveitchik, and became very famous in America, the Pesach of his Talmidim as well. And therefore that is a very, very legitimate Pesach as well. That you come to Israel, you're really a one-day person, but you keep the chumras of the second day because, you know, you don't want to, you're not 100% clear exactly whether you're staying, whether you're going, and therefore that is a legitimate Pesach too. So you end up basically with three serious possibilities in terms of Pesach: 1 day, 2 days, 1.5 days. And I want to just stress, all three of these are legitimate Pesachim. No one should ever say, well, that's a silly Pesach, this and that, the other. They're all based in very firm foundations. And the question is, which one do you do? Noah. It's basically the Chacham Tzvi, that you're in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore you have Kedushas HaAretz, but on the basis, Rav Soloveitchik says like this, that the day itself has no Kedusha, because you're passing out the Chacham Tzvi, but you, on the Gavra, on the person themselves, have certain Minhagim that you've brought with you, and therefore you don't do Malacha on the day because of the personal obligation you have, but the day itself has no Kedusha, therefore you daven chol. And you certainly don't cancel out other mitzvahs d'oraisa like tefillin, etc. And therefore, that Pesach has relevance as well. It's basically almost like enforced day of rest. You just sit there and do nothing. Are you allowed to go on public transport if you're keeping a day and a half? That's an interesting question which we'll get to. Are you allowed to ask Israelis to do things for you even if you're keeping 2 days? We'll get to that in a minute. Now, what about you folks? Where does that leave you? So I brought you some interesting examples on page 9. First of all, on page 8, I brought you some factors as to how the poskim make their decisions on who should do what.
But if you look, not page 9, sorry, page 10, 11, page 11. Sorry, it's a rather long source sheet, but you get your money's worth at least. Oh, you didn't realize you were paying? Okay, fine. Fine, your parents get their money's worth. Fine. Look at page 11 for a second. Let me tell you some interesting specific cases, and you'll see if you can fit them all together. So, a family that moves to Israel, but retains ties to Chutz La'aretz, and they're not sure if it'll work, and maybe they'll move back. So that's the classic suffix that I said before. Rav Eliashiv actually holds one day, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Avadi Yosef hold 2 days, and some people hold, like the Chacham Tzvi, that in the suffix cases, it'll push you into the one-day people, and you end up keeping 1 day. There is a shita, by the way, of the Aruch HaShulchan, that if you spend an entire year in Israel, 12 months, then you automatically become a one-day person. And some people do hold with that. That if you spend an entire year, 365 days in Israel, I don't know if it has to be 365 or it has to be 354, actually. What is a year? A year presumably is a Jewish year, a calendar year, so 354 is probably good enough. I'm not sure about that. Have to look in the Aruch HaShulchan. But most people don't tend to go with that, but there is a shita out there like that. What about a seminary student or a yeshiva student who is in Israel for 10 months? What should they do? So, Rav Moshe Feinstein paskens, they should keep 2 days if they are dependent on their parents. They should keep 2 days if their parents want them to come back and they have to do what their parents say. But they can keep 1 day, says Rav Moshe, if they are financially independent or they're being supported to stay in Israel by their parents. Says Rav Moshe, that seems like a 1 day psak. Rav Avadia takes it the other way. Rav Avadia really says they should keep 1 day because there's a serious possibility that they might end up staying. Why? Because people are single, they have options open in front of them. Okay, they have plans, but their plans can change. They might make aliyah, and therefore, very famously, Rav Avadia paskens, and this is a very well-known sect in the Sephardi community, that a yeshiva student or a seminary student keeps 1 day of Yontif if they're here for their 10 months in Israel. That is also Rav Malamed's sect. You keep 1 day here, even if you're here for just the academic year. Even if you have no plans to make aliyah, says Rav Malamed, even if you have no interest in staying in Israel, even if your parents absolutely made you sign that you're coming back and you're going to college and you're never going to break that promise, he says you still keep 1 day in Israel. Although, as I say, other people definitely would say in that circumstances, those circumstances, to keep 2 days. I brought you other cases here. You can look at it. There's a very famous psak of Rav Shlomo Zalman that if you own property, sorry, if you spend 3 regalim in Israel, if you generally come to Israel for all of the Shlosh regalim, so then it doesn't make any sense to say that you have the minhagim of Chutz La'aretz when the relevant period you're always in Eretz Israel. And that is paskin in the Mincha Shlomo. You keep 1 day. Rav Avadia also will say you keep 1 day, although other people say you will keep 2 days for that. Somebody who owns property here and usually spends the regalim, I talked about that as well. This is interesting. What about someone who changes in the middle of Yontif? The old case was that the boat gets in late. So when Yontif started, he was in Chutz La'aretz. By the time Yontif ended, he was in Eretz Israel. So there is precedent that you should keep 1 day for that. I brought you Rav Tukachinsky's psak, although other people say too. There was a case in one of the yeshivas in Israel on second day Shavuos a few years ago, where one of the guys after Shacharis, before Musaf, announced that he's been so inspired by Shavuos that he's decided to make Aliyah, and nothing is going to change his mind. And now he has 2 shailas. Does he have to daven Shacharis again, because he just davened Yontif, and maybe he's Israeli now? And does he have to keep the rest of the second day Yontif, or can he make Havdalah and just get on with it? What was the psak? He was told that he doesn't have to daven Shacharis again because Shacharis, he was chutznik and he davened the right Yontif, but he doesn't have to keep the rest of Yontif because he's now an Israeli and he can make Havdalah and get on with it. So when I heard the story from the rabbi who was involved, so of course we asked him, did the guy make Aliyah? And he said, that's another story. Okay? So I don't know what the answer is, but that can happen. It's very practical. It could happen. Somebody could make that decision in the middle of their second day Yontif plans. I brought you at the bottom here, Rav Malamed has some very interesting psakim for 1 day. He holds, for example, a visitor, once you clock up 365 days to Israel in your life, you become a Ben Eretz Israel, he says. And you always keep 1 day after that, which is really interesting. I don't know if you can count whether you've ever spent that long in Israel, but that psak is not accepted by many people, but it's an interesting psak. He said, anyone who's Israeli and comes back to visit keeps 1 day. Anyone with plans to make Aliyah at some stage in the future keeps 1 day. And other examples like that. How do you make a decision, guys? How do you know which way you go? So again, I've hopefully been very clear to you that all of these psakim are legitimate psakim. What should you do? So it's very simple. Number one, ask your poisek. Ask your rabbi. But you don't know who your rabbi is, you don't have a rabbi. Okay, you should get one. Okay, but if you haven't got one, ask your family's rabbi. But you don't like your family's rabbi, and you don't want to ask them, and you don't have a posek either. For Seder, so we thought of that already, and we have an MMY, a friendly, handy, user-friendly posek, who is available for everybody, who is called Rabbi Eliezer Lerner, okay? And he will paskin your shilas for you. What he's going to say to you, I don't know, you have to ask him. Rabbi Lerner, ask him. So he's our posek, so ask your posek, and we'll respect your psak 100%. Ask your family's posek, great. Ask Rabbi Lerner, great, see what he says. If you can't do any of those three, yes you can, but if you can't, then you would follow the majority of psak of the community that you come from. You had a question? It's hard to believe that you wouldn't fall in any of these categories. Like somebody who doesn't fall into any of these categories? So then they'd have to see what is it about them that's not clear. And if they're really in a grey area in between, then it'll depend on their posik. If they ask a posik who takes account of the Chacham Tzvi, they'll be probably Keltzikik one day. If they ask a posik that doesn't take account of the Chacham Tzvi, they'll be Keltzikik 2 days, or a day and a half. Okay? I asked a rabbi from Midrashic HaRova yesterday, I was walking home from Shul with him, what do you tell the girls? So he said, we tell them to ask a Shaila. Just like I said. Says, what you tell them if they didn't ask a Shaila, yada yada yada. And he seems to come out that very often they end up with a 1.5 day psak. But it depends on the individual and depends on their circumstances. Just the last question and then we'll finish. What do we do about asking Israelis to do things for you? Let's say you're keeping 2 days, and that's perfectly legitimate, you're keeping 2 days Yontif. Are you allowed to ask an Israeli on second day Yontif to do something for you? So I put it on page 12 here. There is a debate about that. Rav Moshe says definitely not. Rav Avadi Yosef says definitely yes. And many poskim are lenient if it's a tzorech mitzvah or if it's a shas hadchak. You're certainly, according to most poskim, allowed to benefit from something that Israeli does for you if you didn't ask. There's no issa of getting hanor from that. It's less serious than asking a non-Jew, or if a non-Jew does something for you on Shabbos or Yom Tov, there may be an issa often of hanor from that thing itself, even if you didn't ask. With second day Yom Tov and Israelis, that's not the case. Therefore, if the Israelis are running around you, turning the lights on and off, saying, you know, is it too dark in here, is it too light in here, and you're saying, it's fine, you know, and he turned the lights off, so then you can benefit from that. Maybe even you can ask him, can you get the bus? That's an interesting question as well. If you're keeping second day Yontif, are you allowed to get the bus? There are some poskim that do debate that. Yes?
So if you're keeping 1 day.
It's what?
Keeping
1 day.
If someone gives you a Mofad, I will want you to do the on second day.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes. To ask you before Chag, it seems difficult to see why it would be osif to ask you before. For a non-Jew, you can't ask a non-Jew before Shabbos or Chag to do something beyond Chag. But since anyway there are poskim that say even on Chag you can ask an Israeli to do something for you, it seems difficult to understand why you would say you can't ask him. I don't know. I have to look at Rav Moshe to see what he says there. But according to many people, that will be 100% fine. Because Rav Avadi, for sure, it will be 100% fine. Yes?
You were asking someone, an Israeli, could you ask them like an indirect way? Like, that would be so nice.
See, I don't know if you even need to do this. If it is an issa of Amira. You see, they base it off the issue that if someone hasn't brought in Shabbos yet, and you have brought in Shabbos, you can ask them directly to do malacha for you. You brought in early Shabbos, they didn't. You can say, oh yeah, I forgot to turn on the air conditioning, I forgot to turn on the lights, please do this for me. You don't hint to them there. So they want to say the same thing here, others want to say it's not exactly the same. I'm not sure, I've not seen anyone talk about hinting. Okay? That's how good a hinter you are, maybe. So, fine. So, what should you do? We talked about that. How does it work? Hopefully, you understand second day Yontif pretty well. I'm sure you all understood it before anyway. But even if you did, hopefully that assisted somehow to clarify certain issues. I'll take 2 questions and then I will give the announcements. Yes? If you're asking. No. If you can never ask a rabbi based on the answer that you know he's going to give if he's not someone that you'd normally ask. But if he's someone that you'd normally ask, okay, fine, so you know what he's going to say, that's no problem.
So fine. Yeah. So Judith, this is a general question. The Torah says you have to do what your rabbi says, but who chooses the rabbi? You do. So you choose your rabbi, and then you do what he says. Okay, but if you're being consistent, and you say, this rabbi actually is someone I ask other shilas to as well, fine, there's no problem with that. It is a process. It is a process, and therefore in the meantime you can fall back on your family's posek, or on the local community, i.e. MMY, etc., etc. In the absence of anything to the contrary, 2 days is definitely the majority psak for Ashkenazim. So if the school usually says to girls as follows: if you're not Ashkenazi and you're not Chabad and there's no other reason why you should have a different circumstance, you should keep 2 days, usually. But everyone's different and everyone has a different cheshbon. Yes. Yes. Oh, that's a good question. If an Israeli goes to America, is it exactly the same? It may not be exactly the same. First of all, there is more opportunity for machlokas if he doesn't keep second day Yontzef. Secondly, even on Rav Soloveitchik's cheshbon, everyone agrees that second day Yontzef has kedushas hayom in Chutz La'aretz, and therefore it may be stricter for an Israeli in Chutz La'aretz, even according to the Chacham Tzvi, than it is for a chutznik in Israel. Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Although what they have to do in private is an interesting question. Do Israelis have to keep second day in private? I sometimes fly to Israel on second day Yontzef. And you have this interesting scenario where all the Israelis get off the plane and some of them kind of sit in the airport till Yontzef goes out, and some of them like rent a car but don't drive anywhere Jewish until Yontzef goes out. It's an interesting scenario as to how that works. I usually drive to see my parents. I ask the posek in Yerushalayim. My parents live 200 miles from London, so I don't have to drive anywhere Jewish to get there. So I magically appear in Leeds just as Yontzef goes out. And everyone goes, wow, where did you come from? I went, fell out of the sky. So, fine, let's go. Now, announcements? Announcements, fine. Let me turn off this because no one on the internet needs to hear the announcements.